Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining Dr. Perletta Ramos and Roz Shell in Living Life Powerfully. We help you turn the ordinary into the extraordinary by claiming your power, getting your heart in the game, and learning how to live from the inside out. Let's create more happiness and success in your life.
Hello, welcome to Living Life Powerfully. The topic for today's show is fear. We've got Halisi Tambuzi as our guest, and Halisi is uniquely qualified to talk about fear because he's alive, right? Because every human being has some experiences with fear. He's also an amazingly brave man. He's the middle of three children, a native of Arizona. He completed law school in 2015 and recently accepted a position as an employment law advisor. And although he's a mere 29 years old, for those of us who are might be double his age or more, he has experienced fear. And I say that he's brave because he's willing to talk about the fear, and not only the fear that he's had, but how he's worked to address that fear. So thank you, Halisi, for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Fear is a distressing emotion that can cause an impending threat or danger of pain or suffering. And regardless of whether the fear is based on something real in our minds or something imagined, it can cause a tremendous amount of anxiety, stress, and unhappiness. The topic of the show is overcome fear by recognizing the truth that there is no such thing as failure. So what do you have to say about that topic, Halisi? What is your understanding of fear and how do you overcome it?
Oh, with fear, I mean, I completely agree with you that the idea of failure is really not present. And that's why, when I think about fear, I understand it as this emotion of feeling more inadequate, as if you didn't meet your bar or the bar that you may have set for yourself. But like I said, that even though you didn't meet your particular bar, it does not mean you have failed. And sometimes fear can be understood as, well, is fear a virtue or a vice? Is it a positive or a negative? And to me, it seems like, well, it's going to depend on who the individual is. Is it the person trying to use fear, or is it the person who is the fear is being applied to? And those are, I think, certainly different distinguishments. The person who is receiving the fear, or what we may perceive as fear, it may be a virtue in the sense that it might push you to meet your goal. And so fear is a positive aspect in that sense. It might be a negative if it prevents you from meeting your goal, or puts you in a place of where you're likely to receive more harm. And so in that sense, that fear is certainly a vice. And then if you're certainly trying to use fear on a different individuals, or an individual, or a group of people, then it certainly, it can be a vice in that manner, because you're essentially you can be using it for a type of control, which probably the worst type of use of fear that can be understood.
Well, you mentioned three examples of how fear can be at play, which is interesting. So let's talk about them. And the three of them, as I caught them, are the fear of failure, using fear as a motivation, so as a virtue versus a hindrance, which is the vice, and then using fear as a weapon. Give us an example of how fear of failure and not, you know, meeting the bar that you've set for yourself has impacted you in your own life.
Mm-hmm. It impacts me because it's always there. Even when I was younger, I played basketball, eventually going on to play college basketball. And so even in that realm, in that point in my life, that fear was present. Did I want to travel out of state to where I don't know anyone, where I go across the country, don't have many family members to connect with. My friends aren't present there. And it's really trying to get involved in a new type of world, not a new type of world, but just being around individuals who I am not normally around. So I don't know their behaviors. I don't know their beliefs. Don't know the norms. Each area of the country is going to have their own type of norm. So have to get used to those. And at the same time, you don't want to lose yourself, lose what norms you hold for yourself. So that's certainly where fear is. Fear can be present, and being able to be introduced to other people who may have come from different backgrounds is I think a powerful aspect to be able to move like that, and to be able to respect people from where they came from and have them respect your beliefs. And so those two individuals begin to interact, and I think that that's part of what just growing up and what I've learned and just how to interact with people. So the fear is there, but I just don't allow it to hinder me in that way.
Ties into the second example that you gave around fear being a virtue or a vice. So you found a way to be motivated by the mm-hmm. fear and how did you do that? What is the practice that you use?
A lot of times it has to do with making sure that I try to surround myself with good people, and having a good strong base of people around me to talk to when I really have issues going on, and it's not that I'm going to take whatever comments I receive from them as that's what I need to do, but it allows me to wrestle with ideas and wrestle with different options. So really keeping trying to keep positive people in your circle who really want to see you be happy, and see you be the best that you can be. And so I would tell anyone, if anyone younger than me, hey, try to make sure you're keeping positive individuals in your circle who you feel like you're able to connect with. And so sometimes that may come from the most people you would not have even thought about who are going to help you. And you have to be open to that as well. Because I have certainly close friends who may not be what I may consider a typical, who would be in my circle. So just people can come from many different backgrounds, and they can provide a certain, I don't want to say service, but they provide some type of emotional, they can provide an emotional connection.
I love what you're speaking to, in the sense that it does, it takes a village, and we are interdependent. We're not dependent mm-hmm. or independent. And mm-hmm. I love the fact, you know, when you're talking about, yeah, just being around other people, hearing them, listening to their opinions, it helps you to wrestle and mm-hmm. to help you grow and evolve. And I think that's mm-hmm. really important, because we can't do it alone.
Right.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the most difficult thing to try to do it alone. And there are some times where I'll sit in my fear, and try to wrestle with it by myself. But sometimes sitting with it is not is not conducive to coming out of it. And sometimes I need to have an exchange with someone to put it all out all on the table. But it's helpful in that manner. And so I can appreciate fear for what it is.
Sometimes sitting with it makes it grow bigger. If you just sit with it and the story keeps expanding in your own head. So it is helpful to, bring it out. And that way you can hear it for yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have been reading recently a book called How to Practice the Way to a Meaningful Life by the Dalai Lama. And in it, since he's a Buddhist, he talks about the practice of, being mindful, as a form of meditation and being aware of your thoughts. And so this idea that both of you are mentioning is, in terms of sitting with things, there's a balance, right, that of sitting and watching, experiencing the emotion, not attaching to it and being gripped by it, but just recognizing, okay, fear is an emotion that we experience as human beings. There's nothing to be afraid of that we have fear. But being able to utilize it in service of yourself as a motivation, as Felicity mentioned, and or just being with it but not attaching to it, like I just mentioned, is a skill that we can learn to overcome. And I think sometimes one of the greatest obstacles to having inner peace are these emotions that we have, whether it be anger or attachment or fear. And we don't know what to do with it. So as you mentioned, Halisi, you just sit with it and you go, okay, now this at some point is not productive. What do I do? And there's a way that it sounds like you've learned to come out of it. One of them is to engage with other people. What's another way?
Another way is recognizing that it's not going anywhere. to get comfortable with the idea that it's not going anywhere. As long as we're going through this life through space and time, it's going to be present. It may take on different forms, but it's not going. It's almost like a marriage that you never even asked for, really. And so, so recognizing that it's there, but not allowing it to have the final say in your actions. Mm-hmm. Because when you allow it to have that final say, then it's going to play that role of that vice, and it can definitely hinder you from what you're trying to do to find your happiness. So by not allowing it to put its foot on your neck in such a way, you're accepting that marriage, and you're walking with it.
I love what you're speaking to, because it's that acceptance, really. Sometimes we resist ourselves, we resist our feelings. We make them grow larger when we're in that internal battle, and it creates, another layer of, maybe self-criticism or self-doubt when we just don't accept who we are and how we feel and then work from there. I think practicing compassion and kindness with ourselves is a part of that acceptance, right? It's like, okay, this is where I am right now, and I can use this, as you mentioned, using it as a virtue. I can use it to motivate me to change my circumstances. On some level, you have to have some awareness, to do that. It doesn't always come instinctively for us to do that.
Most definitely. And so... So making sure that you accept it and you understand that it's going to be present. So I love those two things: talking to people and accepting it.
In the three items that you mentioned before, that I just want to go back to because I was curious. You said using fear as a weapon or for control. What do you mean by that?
I guess that's from the user standpoint, that if I wanted to use fear against someone else in order to have some type of control. I mean, you can see that in relationships, that's certainly present. You can see it on a large population of people, that can be present as well. And I think those are probably more the more vicious forms or use of fear that also need to be wrestled with. And that can be more damaging to a person's psyche. So the person applying the fear to another person, another group of individuals. So I just think of how, depending on how you are distinguishing fear, it can certainly be a virtue or a vice, and also depending on who is using it or who it's being applied to.
What about when fear is being applied to you from somebody else? You know, and this is what I always think about dealing with insecure people.
Mm-hmm.
Because have a lot of fear inside of them, and it's challenging to deal with people that are applying the fear to you.
Most definitely. It might even be a little more stressful to even try to wrestle with whether they're trying to place their fear on me. That
mm-hmm.
even just when you mention it mm-hmm. it feels like it heightens my blood pressure. You know, just because mm-hmm. because just that idea of trying to consider what someone is trying to do to me, mm-hmm. the mental mindset that you have to go into is stressful in and of itself. If it's just me placing fear on myself, then mm-hmm. that's a lot less stressful than considering whether someone else is trying to do something to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I have to get in their mind, and that's very difficult.
Right, and I think that's where what Perletta's talking about, you know, having that compassion and really understanding what fear is so mm-hmm. key, because if we can really sit with it, if we can really feel it, if we understand it, then we can deal compassionately with somebody else that's trying to inflict the fear on us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, most definitely.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I want to switch to fear of failure, because that's been my nemesis, I would say, throughout my life. I mm-hmm. used to have a fear of heights, but I jumped out of a plane. I've done some things to, like, move past that. But my fear of failure is, I'll say, one of my life lessons, one of the things mm-hmm. that I think many people have. So I'm not alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fear of failure can be related to, you know, feelings of inadequacy, self-criticism, self-rejection, or even the rejection of others. You kind of hinted on that earlier, Lisi, when you played basketball, you know, you kind of wanted to go out mm-hmm. of town. You know, if you didn't, mm-hmm. I don't know if that was because you felt like others, you know, you didn't want to disappoint or whatever. But this, what has been your experience with fear of failure in terms of current, and how do you mm-hmm. manage that?
With fear of failure, I mean, even more currently, going through law school, initially I had to consider, hey, am I supposed to be here? I'm actually in law school, but is it the place where I'm supposed to be? Is it a place where I'm going to be accepted? So I had to wrestle with that, and eventually you start to understand, you know what, I am supposed to be here, and I am able to critically think through issues, and this is just a learning process of how to think about and understand the law. So even at that stage of my life, fear is still present. It's going to be present in relationships with other people, whether or not a relationship is going to work, whether or not So it's constantly there. It's constantly moving. So just trying to pick up on it when it's there.
And I think, you know, everything that I've read in terms of spiritual literature points us to another way. Like, you know, there's a part of being human that means we all have frailties, and mm-hmm. there's a way to use life experiences as a virtue. You know, as you mentioned, I love that you said that, it's going to stick with me forever. And, you know, and so how do we take these experiences that we all have and not allow those feelings or thoughts to impede us? You know, when we look at quote-unquote successful people, that's what they do. It's like there's no absence of fear. There's no absence of it. You know, people who stand in front of audiences, one of the greatest fears is, you know, public speaking, they say. And people who perform talk about the fact that they're fearful. You know, they have the butterflies every time, and yet they're able to move beyond that in order to either perform or to demonstrate their talent or to do whatever it is that they're seeking to do. So I love putting things in the context of suffering because it's kind of where I am right now. And fear of failure creates a ton of internal suffering.
Yeah,
that you're making up yourself, you know. No one's making you suffer. It's like you're creating this internal sense of, you know, I'm just not enough. And, you know, there could be, as I mentioned, self-loathing or self-criticism. And when we're not aware of that, it can be a horrible abyss that we stay in. And the reality is it's of our own making. And so freedom lies in recognizing, you know, like, we all create some suffering in some form because that's a part of being human. And it's like a disease that we've contracted, and yet there's a cure, right? There's a cure for that disease, and we can shift our way of being by focusing on the cure. And so, Roz, you haven't been saying much. What would you say is the cure that you found in your own life in dealing with whatever fears that you've had, certainly specifically the fear of failure? I know we've talked about this personally, you and I.
Yeah, and you know, remember when we were in Toastmasters, Perletta, and one of the things that they would tell us is in the beginning when you get up there and you start speaking, you know, the butterflies in the stomach, they're all over the place. And later on, once you become a little bit more experienced in giving the public speeches and speaking, you know, in any capacity in public, that the butterflies will be falling, will be flying in formation. So I was just going to say, I think it's a degree of fear that changes possibly. So that's how I deal with it. You know, once I can sit with it, then I may still have a degree of fear, but now the butterflies are flying in formation. So it's not, you know, it's not so gripping where I'm not effective, but yet I still have that healthy sort of, you know, concern around whatever it is that I'm doing. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's excellent. The degrees. I like the part that we were talking about, the degrees of fear. The fear will lessen. If you start your task, if you open a business, it might the initial step of opening a business might be pretty fearful, and then once you get over the fact that hey, the business is open at this point, now there's going to be other little nuances that certainly are fearful. But since we've opened the business at this point, we at least know we can handle some stress, and guess what? Maybe we can handle a little bit more. And so you continue on. So I certainly agree with those differing degrees of fear that can come into play.
One of the things that one of the things that I've done is to really redefine my definition of failure. I did this, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, because what I recognize is it, sometimes it stopped me from trying things because I didn't want to fail. And so, you know, and I had a very limited idea of what success meant. You know, my definition was I had to succeed at everything I did. You know, like I gave myself very little room because my criticism, my self-criticism was so high. And so I've worked with, you know, when I redefine my definition, for example, my definition of failure now is not trying. It's real simple. It's like, failure is not trying, not what happens when I try, but if I fail to even try, then I failed. So when I really looked at internally, you know, what was holding me back, it was this it actually gripped me for quite a while of stretching outside of the bounds of what I thought was possible for me. And we keep ourselves really small, you know, when we do that. And so sometimes just looking at how we create stories about our limitations and what our capacity is and redefining that for ourselves can make a tremendous difference. I know I want to switch now to this concept of manhood and being an African-American male, because I'm assuming growing up with, you know, A, being a male, and B, being an African-American male, has some unique characteristics around failure and the pressure you may have put on yourself or that you feel like society may have put on you, having those characteristics. What do you have to say about that?
I have to say, I mean, growing up being a native of Arizona, I've seen, I guess, the change in the amount of minorities who have come into the state. And so me even initially dealing with it, I've had to navigate myself through the environment sometimes on a daily basis. And sometimes it can come down to whether or not I'm going to smile, or how is my smile going to be perceived? Am I smiling to make someone comfortable? Because there was certainly a period in my younger life where individuals thought I was aggressive, or I thought that I was mad all the time, and I always wondered why that was. Like, it wasn't. And then there was a point where I was like, you know what, a smile might cure all that up. so sometimes I use that sometimes I use it to my advantage sometimes. Whether or not I should or whether or not I feel like I have to. If a smile is going to change the perception or make the environment a little better, well, that's not much of a burden for me, so I can use my smile in that way if it's going to help me connect better with someone, and then we can have a conversation. Presently, if I didn't smile of some sort, we may not be able to have a conversation. So that would go back to that point of failure is not even trying. So if that smile is even that little vehicle that allows me to be able to converse with someone, well, then that's not much of a burden for me, especially if I'm able to tell my truth after that smile comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's interesting.
So me being, and sometimes it's also affected me in such a way where I have locks. So for individuals who don't have the image, I have locks. And to me, there was certainly a period where I feel like that they're being more accepted in society, also accepted in the professional arena. And so there's certainly it plays a role sometimes of whether or not I'm going to wear my locks tied back or just have them down.
I appreciate you're taking responsibility for how others may perceive you and how people may be fearful of you based upon your appearance, and then you're extending yourself in that way. That's actually quite kind, like, and compassionate. So thank you for that. It's surprising, but our time has come to an end. I'd like to thank you, Khaleesi, for joining us on the show today. Raj and
thank
I
you
are
for
grateful
me.
Thank
you. Here.
Thank you so much, Khaleesi.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for having me. It's been...
Oh, absolutely. Well, maybe we can have you back at some point in the year. please feel free to email us. This is to our listeners at pearlrajradio@gmail.com, and to like our Facebook page. Stay empowered, stay true to yourself, and have a fantastic and an amazing week.
Take care.
All right. You guys have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye.